it's about the same in terms of the atmosphere. It's about the same as it was when we kicked off at 9. I can't tell you that the picnic tables are filling up because they're not, at least until tomorrow. Pat McKenna joins us, and Pat has been so invaluable and on a regular basis going back to the suspension of racing and then the work toward the restarting of racing downstate in anticipation of what was going to happen here at Saratoga. And now it's happening. And even as late as 3 o'clock yesterday, Pat, news and reaction and having to make some Rocco tote ready. The mutual's all set. head of mutuals, Rocco, coming by. Pat, an 11th hour announcement from the Gaming Commission that the plan for owners' attendance was given the green light. And very quickly, you and the team have had to react.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So late yesterday afternoon, the New York State Gaming Commission posted to their website updated guidance regarding owner attendance across New York State racetracks. So not specific to NARA, similar to when the governor announced the resumption of racing back in May. That was not specific to NARA either. So it was then incumbent on each individual racetrack to make decisions about how those regulations would impact our own operations. We've been preparing for these for the better part of a month now, and that's in all cases, right? We're preparing, I've said it a number of times in recent days, we're not making decisions, we're not able to make decisions about access to this facility in any way. Those are all the decisions that are best left to elected officials and public health experts. What we can do is be prepared when those decisions come down in whatever form or fashion they do come down in. So beginning tomorrow, we'll be allowing 8 owners per horse. All owners per the Gaming Commission regulations must be licensed by the New York State Gaming Commission. So there are no friends, family, or guests. These all need to be properly licensed by the New York State Gaming Commission beginning tomorrow. So it will certainly be a different feel. Another thing that is important to mention is the regulations do not allow owners to be in any indoor areas. So that is inclusive of, at least in the case of Saratoga Racecourse, the clubhouse boxes, grandstand, top of the stretch. Any of those areas are off limits to owners. So our facility staff has set up some picnic tables in areas near the paddock and other spots with some shade, and that's where owners will be able to be. They can come out to the apron for the race, but like everything else these days, we're operating under really strict health and safety guidelines. Masks are absolutely mandatory at all times. It's really, really important to mention and to emphasize. They'll have their temperature checked at the gate, and they need to make their applications 24 hours in advance through the Horsemen's Relations Department. So those are the important things to mention, and here we are.
We should, we should include, and I referenced it earlier, normally I sit right outside the racing office and outside of Lou Cobell's credentialing spot. And Lou is over at Clark's Cottage. And for those of you that don't know what Clark's Cottage is, it's right outside the clubhouse entrance with that one crazy remote barn and on Lincoln, the row that starts with Ciro's. Then there's the Stakes barn. Then there's the little remote barn.
Let me interrupt you there, yeah. Steve. So the way that I've been describing it is if you take a left onto Nelson from Union,
right,
you go through the light, you go through the first light past the area that's generally used for parking,
right,
and then you'll take a left onto Frank Sullivan Place. It's where the Trackside Grill,
yes,
ordinarily would be operating.
Yes,
Clark Cottage is at, yeah, just at that corner right before you would get to the Mary Lou Whitney entrance. And in there is a one-stop shop for owners. So the New York State Gaming Commission will be on the second floor, either renewing or processing new license applications, and Luke Hobel in Horseman's ID is on the first floor from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m.
And a couple elements of this, and you might not have this answer yet. If people are coming and haven't been licensed, are they going to be able, like day of or day before?
No, I would. There should be no expectation that you'll be able to get licensed day of. I mean, you can imagine that there will certainly be a backlog in the same way that we'll not be accepting reservations, applications on the day that your horse is running. Really need to plan ahead, and that's in the interest of everyone. Here, we need to maintain rosters of every individual that's on the grounds for obvious reasons, should it get to a point where you're going through a contact tracing system. And that's the same protocol we have for everyone else on the property, and that's important for people to remember. So no day of licensing, certainly no day of reservations, applications. Really, as soon as that overnight is out, folks should be looking to get in touch with Horseman's Relations, should they be interested.
So they don't necessarily have to do it 24 hours in advance. Like yesterday, we had the Saturday card pulled, so they could call 48 hours, like today, for Saturday.
Correct.
All right. So that, and I'm going to give those pieces of information and the phone number for those that have not seen it. And of course, this is on the website, all the information at NYRA.com as well, should be, there it is. I'm thumbing through stuff, Pat, and it's right here. Anything else on this topic, Pat, that you think people need to be aware of in terms of coming in? I did bring it up with Dave. We were just sort of wondering out loud the 14-day the states where if there's owners that are coming.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and no need to wonder. Owners, if they're coming from any of those states, and that list is rapidly expanding, I would check the New York State Travel Advisory, is what it's called. Unfortunately, states are being added to that list just about every other day. If you're an owner and you're traveling from any of those states, you are subjected to a mandatory 14-day quarantine. There are provisions that make exceptions for essential workers. Those are generally folks directly connected to the care of a horse. Veterinarians, grooms, hot walkers, trainers, assistant trainers. The Gaming Commission has made exceptions for those broad categories, as well as the Department of Health and Economic Development. But that's where we are. That's something that obviously New York is taking incredibly seriously, because we have, in large measure, made tremendous progress when it comes to flattening the curve and getting to the other side of this thing. We're not seeing the same in other states.
Let me give everybody, for those that think they're going to utilize it between now and Labor Day, Horseman's Relations at NYRAInc.com is the email address. Horseman's Relations at NYRAInc.com, and the phone number, 516-488-6008. 516-488-6008, and Elise and Teal and Harper that release hadn't been out 10 minutes, Pat, and I was here. The phone started ringing immediately.
Yep.
It was the craziest thing.
Yeah, and I would just add, Steve, if I might, that, you know, while we're here talking about those who may be fortunate enough to get here to Saratoga and spend a little bit of time on the property, we thank the fans who aren't able to be here, all the spectators here in Saratoga, throughout the Capital Region, wherever you might be listening. We miss you, and we hope you're back soon. And let's do everything we can to get on the other side of this terrible pandemic, so that 2021 is the greatest celebration of Saratoga we've ever seen.
Well, we went over the jockey restrictions and so forth, Pat. Other than that, normally we would be talking about certain elements of the season that are all more or less going to end up online. Things like the Battle of Saratoga, the handicapping contest, things like that. You know, and we'll do all we can. I think between the Fox show, having 40 days of that show broadcasting every single race of the meet. That'll go a long way. And I think virtually everybody, Dave Grenick talked about it. I mean, virtually everybody that's going to cover the meet in any way, shape, or form, they're going to go out of their way. Capital OTB, Seth and I talked about this too. We're going to be on the backstretch with our shows. And so everybody's going to want to contribute to making people feel like, you know, they're part of the summer.
Yeah, we hope so. And that's why we felt strongly about permitting limited media coverage during the meet. These are unfortunate times, but they're also historic. And we look to our reporters like Dave Grenning, like you, Steve, to help tell these stories, to help keep the public informed, to help keep us accountable. This is what our hardworking reporters do day in, day out. It's a job. It's a serious job. And you guys are also essential workers, as noted by Governor Cuomo throughout this pandemic, and that's for a reason, because of what I just mentioned. So we hope to see people back here before long, but in the meantime, look to outlets like you and to the Forum and the Times Union and all of our hardworking folks up there in the press box and scattered about the property doing the work.
Pat, I got a question from one of our partners, actually, Avi Friedberg. And Avi, of course, everything's cricket racing, and he's got quite a few horses that'll start during the meet. He's asking about the spouse passes. That's a badge, but it isn't necessarily a license.
Right.
They have to be licensees.
That is the New York State Gaming Commission regulation, licensees.
So, it's not a undue hardship to get get others licensed per se, but it is a process. It is an execution.
The way these regulations are written, and you know, it does make sense at this point. You know, these are intentionally written to limit, to restrict the number of folks on the property.
A necessity in this particular circumstance, and by all rights, Pat, let's be frank, it's a luxury, and you know, granted there are parts of the country that are letting wider amounts of patrons into their facility, but you know, the term abundance of caution continues to be a watchword.
Yeah, it's concerning. I mean, I said it the other day, when you see these big gatherings in places that never fully shut down, these tend to be the places where this virus continues to be out of control.
Yeah.
And these are the things that you know, no state is an island, and this thing is also knocking on the door because of some of the responses or some of the contours of the pandemic in Florida and Arizona and California, and you can list them off, unfortunately, and we wish them all the best. But at the same time, let's continue to be careful and responsible, and it reshapes behavior. This is not, none of these precautions and protocols are normal or comfortable, but it certainly feels like that's still where we are, unfortunately.
Well, you know, it's you're being frank and honest, and just dealing with the hand that has been dealt, and it improved from the first concerns and the first the first occasions that we were considering whether we would even be here, and now we're here.
That's
we're
right.
Start racing,
and let's make the best of it.
Exactly.
We'll have horses in the gate at 1:10 this afternoon, and they'll be off. And what remains the same? 40 days of sensational racing.
Well, how's your family? Your family's up with you, or
not yet? Not yet.
They'll
be up,
up
here next week.
Excellent.
Yep.
Excellent.
It's good to be doing this interview here as opposed to some of the locations that we've spoken. I can remember in early March sitting in my car on the streets of Brooklyn with a crying 2.5-year-old at home doing work calls and talking to you, and that was a pretty scary time. So we have come a really long way, and those were the days when it felt like, wow, is anything, are any of these things, these important events, going to be possible? So it was an achievement to run the Belmont Stakes. The folks that are working day in, day out, facilities, TV, all the folks that really make this happen, said so often that it becomes a cliche, but the men and women behind the scenes are what have enabled us to be here today.
Well, we know officially that this is going forward because Sonny Taylor has making the scene and he's on his way upstairs. Sonny, you all right?
Good.
You sound good. Come stand a little bit behind Pat and so that we can hear you.
I gotta go.
You're gonna go?
Yep.
Pat,
thanks,
thank
Steve.
You so
thanks,
much.
Everyone.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Hey,
Sonny.
What's going on?
How you doing? Here, sit down for 1 second, and Steve Haskins is going to join us momentarily. But Haskins, he's on the phone. He's back in Jersey. What do you think? How do you? What's your take on everything that's gone on?
I don't believe it. What are you going to do?
No, I know.
I never seen nothing like it, and this is my 56th year. And I've never seen nothing like it.
No.
We never will.
No, well, knock on wood.
Yeah. After it gets over with.
You hope so.
We'll be all right next year. No Mrs. Weber.
That's
no
good.
What do you think? Maybe she'll come.
She might. They might come up. I mean, there's a lot of owners that have come up to their summer homes.
John and Teresa Barron. Yesterday, they're here.
Nice.
But they want to come out.
Yeah.
You know, but you can't get there come in the morning just to watch the horses?
Well, they're going to be able to do that. That's happening. That luckily is happening. And they're going to be able to come watch the afternoon. You know, with as long as they're licensed, we've been going over all the details. I mean, they're it's better. Look at it this way. It's better than it was 24 hours ago. That's
the
least.
Your man, the meatball.
He's on site. He's on site. Although they had the Josephine. He's talking Siaka. Josephine had to get a battery. The battery went in her car.
Let me punch
you. Go punch your clock in. And Sonny, I'll catch up with you. I got Steve Haskin on the line, so I'll see you soon. Sonny Taylor, everybody, and Sonny, I resisted. Steve Haskin is in the background. Let me turn that mic off so the wind is getting stronger. Steve, I did resist the opportunity to kid Sonny and say that weren't you around for the first pandemic in 1918?
I remember, you know, Joan was always close to him when she worked at NYRA. That was 1979, and he was already a veteran there.
A veteran. He was ready to retire.
but the thing is that he's not like a regular human being because he's exactly the same now as he did 40 years ago.
That comes from a lot of tennis, and a lot of Saratoga sparkling water.
Yeah, the thing is, most people have seen him for 40 years and have no clue what he does.
Well, a lot of people at NYRA don't have any clue what he does. Sonny's a placing judge.
He's had so many jobs there, but like you always see him walking around. Like he's been like he's been walking for 40 years or whatever, and you're just saying, I keep seeing this guy all the time, but you know who is he? What does he do? I mean.
He is timeless, and Sonny I've referred to many times when certain things come up. In fact, just recently when we who was the conversation with about and came up about Joe Louis and of course Cab Calloway and good friends of Sonny was real friends with Cab Calloway and Joe Louis and countless other New York celebrities and he's I don't want to call him a relic, but I mean he is literally he's 80 something and just not retiring anytime soon.
The thing is, NYRA always had, I'm trying to think of his name, but there was another guy, by the way, that worked for NYRA, and everybody wondered what he does. His first name was Frank. He was a small, thin guy. Oh, God, what was his name? I can't remember his last name. But he was like a fixture there. He would, he'd be all over the place, and nobody had a clue what he did.
Well, and that's actually a racetrack That's actually an axiom at racetracks everywhere. I mean, where there's just generations of people and you know, institutional memories walking around. People that literally, you know, their first job, you know, anywhere was on the track. Our man Capone, Don Capone, you know, Don started here when he was in his teens and spent literally his entire adult life working at the track, and didn't go downstate. He was in charge of the maintenance crew all year long. When the meet would end, he was here. Capone was here when oh my gosh, I'm going to forget her name. When you know, there's an amazing story that has not been told nearly enough, and I've brought this up, Steve. You might have more of the you know, some of the backstory and the specifics than I have at my disposal. But there was the woman who, in the 40s, her husband had been the you know, basically the track manager, and when he died, she took over. And basically, you know, in an era when no woman would be in that role, she ran the facility. She was the facility manager for the next 25 years.
What's that? This was in New York?
This was at Saratoga.
Oh, Saratoga, okay.
Yeah, like from the war years until the 60s. And Don Capone has told me when he got here, she was at the tail end of her career. And it's really something that, you know, somebody with you know, some historic bend would really enjoy. And it you know, especially when there's been so much conversation about, you know, diversity and you know, the industry, you know, inclusion topic, you know, that a woman was running this facility for, you know, a couple of decades in a time when it was fairly unheard of.
Well, you know, I've always felt that you've been reincarnated, you know, that you had been working for some racetrack for like the last 200 years. You keep coming back in different venues. So I'm sure you remember this person, because obviously nobody else remembers somebody in the 40s at Saratoga. But I think you know, you probably knew her very well in your former life on the racetrack.
Well, that's Aaron.
But a lot of these tracks have you know, have their own characters.
Yes.
That, you know,
yes.
That you constantly see. I mean, listen, Churchill Downs had buckwheat for like 80 years, it seems like, you know, on the backstretch. And
yep.
You know, Monmouth Park, I don't even know if he's still working there. Monmouth Park has an elevator operator if you go up to the press box, his name was Ed, I forgot, I don't know his last name, but, I mean, he was there for like ages. I mean, he never changed. He was always there for years and years. But I mean, San Anita's had its characters. They're all over. But that's a good. I'm a good old Sonny. I mean, he is endured. Let's put it that way.
A smile. I'm sure people even heard the smile come across my face. There we go. Blasi and Company. Everybody good? You set? Good luck. Nice. Scott Blasi and the team for the Asmussen Barn.
I just got a text from Scott like 3 minutes before you called. Because I texted him to find out about Sonneman, who had been listed as a probable for the Haskell.
Yes.
And I'd say, boy, that's an ambitious spot. And then I see he wasn't entered. So I texted him this morning, to see if you know what was all about, and he said that the horse is fine. They just thought it was too tough a spot, so they're going to look for a softer spot for him. So he texted me back like 3 minutes before you went on.
Well, he.
I got a press release yesterday that Steve Bick won an award. Congratulations at Monmouth Park.
Thanks very much, the Bill Handelman.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's a fairly new award, right?
After he passed, and of course he died like at the age of 62,
yeah.
I believe. And I remember, you know, it's probably 10 years ago. And I, you know, I met him, you know, as I was getting started with the show and that that Breeders' Cup at Monmouth, and but I, you know, much more readily knew Bill through his writing in the Asbury Park Press. I mean, when I lived in Brielle, I mean, that's, you know, that's how you followed, you know, you followed Monmouth. I mean, the coverage in the in the APP was fabulous.
Yeah, I didn't know him well, but he's a nice guy. And, you know, he was obviously been around for a while himself. But, so how does that work now? Do you receive that in person or what?
I my plan is to head down there and to broadcast from Monmouth tomorrow, actually. And so that's our we're in the seventh race today, so we're going to hang here a little bit and then, you know, hightail it, I think, down. So that's the plan.
I'm glad you're getting around. I'm sure it's fun being at a racetrack. It's probably been a while, you know, even though it's empty, but it seems like you're seeing enough people there.
Yeah,
some walking by. But it's got to seem kind of weird.
It does. I mean, then the Belmont, the experience at Belmont, you know, last month was equally, you know, kind of bereft of humanity. But
it's stranger at Saratoga, because Saratoga,
yes,
you're used to seeing a full grandstand. Belmont,
yes,
Park, you're used to seeing an empty grandstand anyway. So it's going to really feel strange. You know, Saratoga without people is like, it's just not, it's not meant to be. It's
No. The thing is, I've seen Angel Cordero this morning and Barkley Tag, and the horses are being schooled. They're coming back and forth down the bridle path. So the activity. And honestly, Steve, you know, given that the times I've broadcast, you know, over the years from here by the racing office in the mornings, it doesn't, it's only going to feel, you know, particularly strange once the racing day starts. That'll be a different layer. But everybody's eager to get going, and I think everybody's, you know, especially in light of what went on yesterday at Del Mar, everybody's just happy to comply with the regulations involved and make sure that we get to, you know, put on the show. I mean, that's the key.
Well, it's good. I like the fact that, you know, that they basically put an embargo on outside jockeys. And, you know, once you're here, you know, it's like the NBA bubble. You're here, you can't leave. If you leave, you can't come back in again. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with a jockey like Mike Smith, who obviously, you know, is riding in the Haskell. So, you know, obviously you're going to have to find another rider for Midnight Bisou or... because he can't come to Saratoga, and then it's going to be interesting to see that if you're there today, you're fine. If you're not there today, you can't come. So I mean, I think it's a good thing because we see what's happening at Del Mar now. I mean, what is it up to 18 now or something like that? 18 positives, I think, or 15, 18, something like that. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty scary. And we don't know what's going to happen, and you know, we've already lost seeing maximum security, and now we're in danger of possibly having this. I don't know how long this is going to last, but you know, with the shared belief up for grabs right now, and you know, some interesting horses going there. You know, Honor AP, he's got to run somewhere, and if they cancel the shared belief, and John Sheriff is forced to come to Saratoga. He doesn't get Mike Smith, but now Mike Smith is unauthentic for some reason. So it's a crazy situation. I don't think anybody has a clue what's going on. Maximum security, by the way. I mean, you know, he's obviously ready for a race. So hopefully they'll be able to run this race next week. Otherwise, he might have to ship to Saratoga. Got to get a race in somewhere.
Well, and I do
say maybe you can ship back to Mom. Maybe you can ship back to Mom. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. Are they running the Island this year, or maybe a race like that, or something at Monmouth? I don't know. It's got to be crazy on these trainers. We'll have to keep making up these schedules, trying to figure out where to go with their horses. I mean, it's just everything's so discombobulated. And all these races seem almost at random. You say, oh, you know, I got all these races to choose from now because they're all being crammed into a short period of time.
Well,
we lost the West Virginia Derby. That would have been even another race to choose from.
Well, and the West Virginia Derby coming out, and now that we've got this Peter Pan today, the Haskell on Saturday, just coming off of the weekend past, and the Indiana Derby, we're really down to some shorter strokes, because the Shared Belief on the 1st, the Travers on the 8th, the Ellis Park Derby on the 9th, which is starting to get some bodies associated with it.
That's going to be a good race. I mean, there's some pretty nice horses in there. My question is, are there going to be any horses left to run in the Travers other than the three obvious horses? You know, when you look at Tizalore and Max Player and Uncle Chuck coming in, I don't know who else is around. I don't think you're going to see anybody coming back off to Haskell in 3 weeks. I would doubt that. So, you know, you got horses running into Peter Pan. You got horses at the end of the meet that'll be running into Jim Dandy. So you're just saying, where are these horses coming from? Because a lot of them have already run. They've already, you know, committed. You know, a lot of them ran in the Bluegrass Stakes. A lot of them ran in these lesser races, the Indiana Derby, the Iowa Derby, and so you just have to wonder. I have no clue who's going to run the Travers other than those three horses. I don't know who else is around.
On that topic, Steve, let's get some recap from you on the Bluegrass and Indiana Derby a little bit. But, you know, obviously the Bluegrass performance, you and I were excited about Art Collector and, you know, for Tommy Drury, who's, you know, as wonderful a story as you could get, you know, for those that always root for the best story.
Yeah, I mean, I texted him after the race. I says, "Well, I said you can start using the D word again, because every time he would text back, he'd say he doesn't want to say the D word. He won't let anybody around him use the D word." So I said you can start using the D word now, because I've really, really liked everything I've seen about this horse. You know, I've written about him quite a bit, even from a physical standpoint, just the way he runs, the way he strides out, the professionalism. You watch the head-on, the way he carries his legs under him, perfectly straight, very professional, no ducking in, no ducking out. And the fact that he's so versatile, you know, last race he won on a lead. The race before that he came from, 7 3/4, 8 lengths off the pace. If there's anything wrong with him, here he pressed the pace the whole way. You know, he's just one of these horses that you can do anything with. You know, Tizalore is probably like that, but he hasn't quite shown the versatility of this horse, as far as being on the lead or being 8 lengths off the lead. He's got a closing kick. He's got cruising speed. He's got a very high cruising speed. He, you know, paces slow. He can go to the front. He's comfortable there. When he won on the front end, he was able to set slow fractions, and even though they were slow, you know, to come home in 23 flat and 5 4 for the last 16th, I mean, that's motoring. And I just thought he... he's just a very professional horse, and he's right up there now with Tizalore and Honor AP. You can put these horses anywhere. I still think Tizalore obviously has to be number one based on accomplishment, but I mean, this horse is right up there. You can, you know, if you want to rank him two, that's fine. If you want, you know, two or three, but right now, until we see what happens in the Haskell, you know, with Dr. Post and possibly Authentic. You know, you've got the three big horses, and to me, at this point, as we speak, you know, there's a bit of a gap between 3 and 4. I think these are three standout horses, and the amazing thing about them is if they all go in the Derby the way they look now, the way they want to run, they want to run the same way. they're going to be very close to each other in the Derby, and it's going to be who makes the first move or who makes the best move. It's going to be very interesting, tactical-wise, because they all have the same running style. So it's going to make it'll make things interesting for sure. But I love Authentic. I mean, I love his pedigree. I just love everything about him.
All right, you're jumping around. Before we talk the Haskell and Peter Pan, other thoughts, anything else about the bluegrass? Because there are actually a couple of performances that on the chart, they're going to look like, you know, they were up the track, but might have been jump starts. Go down the chart a little bit, because I didn't think, you know, not that Art Collector wasn't a resounding winner, but I thought there were a couple of decent performances behind him.
Well, I mean, if I was looking for a Derby horse to come out of this race, I mean, there was a horse who has the quintessential look of a horse who's going to finish in the money in the Derby, and that was Enforceable.
Mm-hmm.
I actually liked his race in there because he broke for the 12th post. He was very far back in the race, so he was way back. And again, he was forced to go extremely wide, and he picked it up at the end, and he was closing. He was beaten in neck for third by Rushy, so he was closing way out in the middle of the track. He had to be 7-8 wide, turning for home. And you know, you look at his race, you get his PPs, and you're going to see, you know, third, fourth, seconds here and there. You know, he does have the win earlier in the year, but you know, this was his first start back in a while, and he looks like a horse that is going to be flying at the end of the Derby. I don't know if he's good enough to win to beat those the top horses, but he certainly looks like one of those horses that you see almost every year that comes flying late to pick up a piece of it at a big price, and he certainly looks like that horse to me. You know, I thought at the head of the stretch it looked like Rushy had a big shot. He just couldn't maintain it. But you know, he ran okay. I mean, I don't know how good he is, but he ran well enough. And as far as the others, I don't know, Attachment Rate is still Attachment Rate. He got into a bit of trouble in the race, so
yep.
I see they put him in the Derby Future Wager. So we'll see what happens with him. And the others, I thought Phoenix the Fierce had a big move at the quarter pole. I thought he was going to be in the money, but he tired the last eighth of a mile. He couldn't sustain it. And you know, the rest of them, forget about it. Basin was very disappointing.
Yes, he was.
Man in the Can was a huge disappointment. He was basically eased in the race.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's hard to look past, past Art Collector. Of course, I thought Swiss Guide Dyer ran a terrific race.
Yes, she did.
You know, set her up beautifully for the Oaks. She, at one point, she looked like, she was going to win the race. The one thing with Art Collector, you know, he did jump to his left lead late in the race. He had never done that, but, you know, I can certainly excuse that. That's not a big deal to me. But, if I'm looking at Derby horses coming out of there, it would be Art Collector number one and Enforceable number two.
Yeah, I agree. And, Enforceable also had, you know, not that you need to make excuses, but, you know, he had been away since March. So, gets him, you know, that much further along. When it came to the Indiana Derby, Shared Sense, a clear winner and a terrific performance. Major Fed came late and was, you know, the two of them had both been back early. So we'll see. Be interesting to see what Greg Foley does coming out of this. I imagine he'll get one more shot. You know, Alice makes sense, I guess. But
they were very happy with his performance. Yeah. I was too. You know, I've been a big Major Fed fan from early in the year. But I thought he ran well. I think he'll improve off of it. And he's another horse that, you know, with his pedigree, certainly looks like he can pick up a piece of it going a mile and a quarter. Because, you know, he's been knocking at the door, and he's run some really big races. So I like the fact that he bounced back, and he ran well enough here to suggest that he's going to move up in his next start. And he should, like I said, he should love the mile and a quarter.
Steve, turn our attention to today. Peter Pan, and this ended up filling up. In fact, Dave Grenig kind of said something that I had been thinking going into it when it showed up, you know, in the Belmont Condition book, that the Peter Pan was going to be run opening day. And I wondered, you know, what kind of a, how money are they going to get for this? And it ended up quite good. And, you know, as a Travers prep and, you know, and more. Give us some thoughts about this group, and then we'll fill out the, any other Haskell thoughts.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting race because if you're looking at horses, new faces ready to emerge, this is the race. You know, I even wrote a column basically on the new faces that is still on the Derby horizon to look forward to, and most of them are in the Peter Pan. You know, headed by a horse that I've loved for a long time, Mystic Guide, and he's going to be the horse to beat. And I think he could be, if he runs a big race here, I think he can certainly be a legitimate Derby horse. I've always loved everything about this horse, ever since I've seen him. And I really loved his race against Tappet to win. I mean, to run that fair, he had no shot to win that race. And he ran a really good second. They were going to run him in the Matt Wynn, but they didn't want to go. He wasn't ready to go against Maxfield, so they found this spot instead. And I thought he ran a very good race. Like I said, I've been very, very high on him. And I had said early in the year that I thought he was going to be a major Derby contender come late spring or summer, and being ranked right up there. And I mean, he still hasn't beaten winners, but I see he's got a tremendous upside, I think. So he's going to be definitely a horse to look. And he's another horse with a beautiful stride, got a look of class about him. And we'll see, you know, we'll see what they do with him now. I would imagine he would run into Travers, but you never know. You never know with trainers. You know, everybody wants to get to the Derby so bad that they're almost afraid, you know, if he runs big here, a lot of these trainers are afraid. Well, you know, I don't want to burst the bubble, so I'd rather go into the Derby off a win, and I'll train them up to the race. But it usually doesn't work that way. Another horse that I've been very high on, and I don't even know what happened, he disappeared off the face of the earth, is this Caracaro. In fact, early back in January, there was an owner that had asked me to, you know, if I saw any potential Derby horses that he could buy, to just let him know. And first horse I came up with was Caracaro. I loved his maiden race at Gulfstream Park. And unfortunately, I guess he got hurt right after that. And his Thurgraf number, you know, wasn't all that great in the race. But I just loved everything I saw about him. And, you know, coming off and not having run since January, this is an ambitious spot for his return. Been out for 6 months. But he doesn't have to win this race. If he runs in the money and is running well at the finish, I think that could really propel him into a starting berth in the Travers, where he would look pretty good, depending on how well he runs in this race. But he doesn't need to win this race. You know, he's been working well. He turned in a couple of six furlong works. He worked 1-11 and 3. And then they brought him to Saratoga. He blew out 3 furlongs and 38 in the slop. So it's a question. We'll see how far he's progressed. But he's a horse with enormous talent as well. So I'm kind of interested in him. And then you can just go down the line. Country Grammar, you know, he's bitonalist. He's a horse who broke his maiden going 1 1/8 and only his second career start and his first start on dirt. And of course, it was, you know, it's the fall of the year, so they went like 154. So off a race run that slow, there was no way he was going to be ready to keep up with a horse like ATA Indian in the Fountain of Youth, which he wound up wiring the field by 8.5 lengths. And he finished fifth, but he was only beaten 0.5 length for second. And, you know, he had a layoff of over 3 months after that, and he came back and ran a strong third in that Tappet to Win allowance race. He finished a length and a half behind Mystic Guide. You know, race running 139 and 3 for the 1/16. That was outrageous. So I think that race should set him up for, you know, for a big performance in the Peter Pan. you know, could be Chad Brown, you know, could wind up to be his big Derby horse. And it's interesting, too, by the way, that Javier Castellano, who rode him in his first two races, is riding Caracaro in this race. And he gets Irad Ortiz, which is certainly not a drop-off by any means. But, you know, you look at his pedigree, he's by a Belmont Stakes winner. He's inbred 3x4 to Pleasant Colony. Traces to Philly Triple Crown winner and Chris Everett. So he certainly has the potential. You know, and he can go down to Candy Tycoon. I don't know about his pedigree. There's a question about how far he really wants to go. I just don't know if he wants to go a mile and a quarter, but he's coming off a strong second in allowance race at Oaklawn Park to Rushy, who obviously came back and ran third in the San Diego Derby in the Bluegrass. And before that, he was second to ATA Indian in the Fountain of Youth. He was beaten, he was beaten 8.5 lengths in the race. But he didn't have the best of trips in there. And then he was out for 2.5 months. But I like the fact that he's been working for a while now over the Oklahoma training track, which I think is going to help him a lot. So he certainly has a shot there. And, you know, he can go down the line. You look at Mohawk, you know, it was a horse that was trained by Bob Baffert. You know, sold for $925,000 at Keeneland September, turned over to Rudy Brissett, you know. He really hadn't done much for Baffert in a few races that he ran him in. And, you know, Brissett ran him in that mile allowance race on the grass at Indiana Grand, which he won. It pressed the pace. And so if you like the grass-to-dirt angle, and if you like the fact that he came back with a half-mile breeze in 47-4 at Keeneland, and he gets switches to Joel Rosario in the Prix de Pan, then, you know, you might have enough reasons to give him a shot. Chestertown, his New York bred $2 million horse. I mean, he must have worked like the devil at the OVS sale to go for $2 million. And, you know, he showed some promise. He broke his maiden in State Bred Company. But he's had issues. They're trying blinkers. You know, he was beaten in his first two open company races, the big favorite in each one. But they were both, they were both solid efforts. But he's obviously, for a $2 million yearling, he's been a disappointment. So, like I said, Asmussen is going to try blinkers for the Peter Pan, switches over to Santana, who, you know, is number one rider. So, you know, it's another handicapping angle. So, you know, you look down at this field, and the only proven horse in here is Modernist, and he obviously is going to be tough to beat based on class. Again, I throw out any horse coming out of the Belmont Stakes. Too many good horses ran terrible races there, and he was one of them. And there was absolutely no reason, you know, for him to get beat over 20 lengths in that race. You know, he just had shown way too much. So I got to figure that there was two or three horses in the Belmont Stakes that looked like they just didn't handle the track at all, for whatever reason. I have absolutely no idea, but it's got to be a throw-out race. But if you go back to the Rising Star in the Louisiana Derby, you got to give him a big shot, like I said, on accomplishment. As far as Celtic Striker, I mean, totally throw out the 19 3/4 length margin in there. I mean, the only reason they got him as a 19 3/4 length winner is the fact that they had to give him it's a match race, and you have to give the winner a margin, but it's not a margin in there because Sonneman was eased in the race, but you can't say he won by eased, so you have to give him some kind of a cockamamie margin, just like you did when Chris Everett beat Miss Musket by 50 lengths in a match race, and when Man of War won the Lawrence Realization in a match race, won by 100 lengths. These aren't legitimate distances. I mean, these are horses that are eased for second. Which in a match race, once you see you can't win, you just stop riding. So it's an intriguing race. We'll see who comes out of it. Is there anybody you like in here?
I'm interested. I think in terms of something other than the obvious, than Modernist or Mystic Guide or Country Grammar. Candy Tycoon, kind of ready to go back to. And you know, I that's what makes this thing kind of fun. There that group of second tier types, like Celtic and Candy and Caracaro, they all seem eligible, you know, to kind of shoulder their way in. And that's the best part of this whole 3-year-old goofball scenario, that you know, instead of being in April or March, we've got horses that are going to be developing, yeah, you know, that are developed and developing at a different timetable, and so it makes it really fascinating to see, you know, what we might get from any of those. I Candy Tycoon, I know, is you know, step forward, I think, since that try in the Florida Derby, and I would expect him to kind of get back to a, you know, an A race in this setting, and he's going to be no better than fourth choice.
No, right. And the thing is, listen, Rush is a good horse. He had no business beating him in that allowance race anyway, and I thought he ran a good race. You know, he ran evenly the whole way, and then was coming on the last eighth of a mile. So it looks like he's going back into the right direction again after that Florida Derby fiasco, which he ran horribly. But he was progressing really nicely. You know, he's moving up the ladder in the maiden races until he finally broke his maiden impressively. And then, you know, his second to Etsy Indian in the Fountain Youth was promising. He had, you know, he's not going to win that race. But coming from eighth, I thought he ran a very good race. Finished ahead of some decent horses in there. And whatever happened in the Florida Derby, you know, that he's already bounced out of that race. So, you know, it's Pletcher and Velasquez. You can't ever dismiss him.
Well, and I think that he's not going to be, you're not going to see him as far back as he was in the Fountain of Youth in the Florida Derby. I think he'll be part of the race flow much more prominently, and there really is not a Caracaro, I assume, is gonna be the speed, and Johnny, you know, Johnny's tendency anyway is to go forward. You know, the two races that you know, one thing about this, if you take a marker and draw a line through the races that Johnny wasn't aboard, and suddenly his record looks a lot different.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see Modernist right up there on the lead. You know, I know you look at his last couple of races, but you know, he didn't have the best of beginnings in the Louisiana Derby. But I mean, he broke his maiden wire to wire, and then came in and won the recent Star, being right on the pace the whole way in an 11 horse field. So I mean, he's got early speed. So if he breaks well here, he's got to be right up close to the pace. And then Celtic Striker's got speed. You know, even going into that match race, he had shown speed throughout his entire career. He's always been right up on the pace. So, you know, I see speed here. Mohawk is, you know, he's got the rail. He's coming off the grass race. He's right up there in every one of his races. So, I mean, if the pace is, I don't know how fast it's going to be, but if it's contentious enough, then I think it could really set up for a horse like Mystic Guide, who I think talent wise might be the most talented horse in the race, maybe along with, I don't, again, Caracaro hasn't done enough. He's only run two times, but from what I've seen of Mystic Guide so far, even though he's only run three times, but from what I've seen so far, he certainly looks like a classic type of horse, and this race could set up perfectly for him. And who knows with Chestertown? Yeah. He gets blinkers on. I don't know how much that's going to affect him. He might be right up close to the pace as well.
It's a fun group.
It's fascinating.
The one thing
about the 3-year-old races this year, you're not finding a great deal of accomplished horses or depth to the field, but all of the races have been fascinating because you don't know what to expect. There's so many horses emerging. But, you know, when you have horses like, you know, Baffert's got two horses pointing for the Derby, and both of them have run two times so far. And everybody's latching on. Oh, you know, Uncle Chuck looks like the next superstar. And Cezanne, they got him at 20-1 in the future wager. But you know, it's not going to be easy for horses with three starts to win the Derby because they're going to be running against, unlike the horses running in the Derby in May, they're going to be running against horses that have far more accomplished and far more experience and more mature physically and mentally. So, you know, it's a different type of Derby this year. You're going to find a different type of horse. These aren't like these young, precocious three-year-olds trying to go a mile and a quarter for the first time. You're going to have horses in there that have run at a mile and a quarter in the Travers, and you're going to have horses that are much more fully developed, like I said, physically and mentally. So I don't know if it's going to be easy to win the Derby and to try and win the Travers off two starts. You know, Uncle Chuck, and listen, he may be very good to us. Baffert's raving about him. But, you know, he's still pretty green his last start. You know, he ducked in in the last 16th, he ducked in and jumped over to his left lead. It was only his second start, so he's still pretty green. So we just don't know what to expect. That's what makes it all the more interesting, because we really don't know what to expect in these races.
Well, Steve, looking forward to opening day here at Saratoga and then Haskell Day on Saturday. I appreciate it. We'll be recapping next week and see how these meets get going, and we'll have some answers about Del Mar, obviously, at that point, and we'll know more. And it's all new ground that we keep covering. So.
Yeah, for sure. Every one of these races, like I said, they're intriguing.
Steve Askin, everybody, and we'll do this. Let's take a break here. And, Case, I'm sorry, I just saw that. Did you already solve that? You must have. Rich Angyet and Tony Black. Let's take our second break of the morning and last. And when we come back, Tony, and we'll close it out with Rich. I bet you he'll have some Saratoga opinions today. And, of course, Rich spent several years here as a young turf publicist. Back after this, Tony Black, Hour 3 at the races, live from Saratoga, opening day.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack. Track Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Serious Action.